guys. Woo!
We love you.
Thank you. I have had a terrible week. The longest, most significant romantic relationship of my entire life ended in a really abrupt and unexpected way on Tuesday.
Aww.
My dog ate my vibrator. So, you know, first things first. First things first, I put the dog down. I just lost all the lesbians in the room. Just sitting there like, I'm not laughing at that. This is not happening. I am texting the Humane Society right now. I'm posting shit on Facebook about that.
There it is, ladies and gentlemen, we are in. This is Amateur Hour, episode 24. My name is Frank. To my stage left, his name is Michael Cooper. To my stage right, her name is Rachel Hinton. Very funny, lovely, talented stand-up comedian. The girl who makes me wish every woman was gay. Welcome to Amateur Hour, Rachel Hinton. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, it's really cool in the hot-ass fucking basement, and you're here. We're here, you know?
I am. It's
human.
It's the middle of the day. It's definitely not. not the middle of the night right now.
It's the middle of the night right now. We did a late night tonight. We hung out at the Comedy Spot until like fucking 12:30. It's 1.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Yeah, it was a great time. So stand-up comedy, you do stand-up?
I do.
Yeah,
we already established that. It's really funny. I'm looking at microphones. I listen to this. I'm like, Frank, I feel like you have such a great like voice for radio. You're you're like the man version of Delilah. You know,
that's the worst shit.
I would not give him that much credit.
That's like the worst ever.
Delilah's done a lot of stuff in her life, and you, come on.
You just got like sexy, sultry man voice. I listen to myself, and I feel like I vacillate from like, I might be a man. I have this very deep, like I listen to recordings of myself and then I look at you know, clips online. And when I get excited, my voice just like skips all the normal octaves and goes straight to like only that which dogs can hear. You know, like, so I feel like I'm already dreading listening to this because it's going to either be like, who's that dude? Or why is she whistling? You know?
No don't. It's good when you listen back. We just can't make the mistake of listening back on it to it like right away, immediately after the episode. Because you're just like, it was a waste of time. You know? That's how it feels. Anyway, the man version of Delilah has a lot of questions for you.
Very interested.
Yeah. So you came off a show Thursday night. How was that? I heard you killed on we were talking about on Working It Out today. Shout out to those faggots. I'm just kidding. How was it?
Gene Moore.
It was great, man. It was really fun. I feel like Thursday night shows are always interesting because either folks come and it's like a Thursday, so it's either kind of weird, or they're like, you know what? I hate my job, and so I'm pretending it's a weekend night already. So
Thursday crowds are good.
Yeah, same with Sunday night crowds. It's like you never really know exactly what you're going to get, but it was a good show. It was a lot of fun.
Did you look at your hand at all when you were telling your jokes?
God, I didn't. I try to avoid that, man. I just...
No way. It was the best thing ever. She had her arm up last show I saw her do, and she killed, by the way. But in the middle, you just so casually, you brought your wrist up, and you were... For whatever reason, she wrote her jokes like as if her hand was going to tell the jokes like this. She kept bringing up her hand and holding it like this. She was like, and it was just like the best thing ever, though, because it was still funny. You're just naturally funny.
I mean, it's because I don't like to do the same jokes over and over again. Like, I like to try out new stuff. And for some reason, yeah, that's the only show where I am totally a control freak. I usually have everything like really internalized in this one show. I just didn't. And so I was like, I think you even said it at one point. I was like, and now this is the part of the show when I look at my hand and try to figure out what the next joke is.
No, it's funny. You drew attention to it the first time. And then the second time you just brought your hand up. You just like brought your elephant trunk up and you looked at it. And you like, I like how you wrote it on your hand. I just never would have thought of
that. Yeah, you know.
Was that the gay comedy night?
It was. That was gay comedy night.
What's that like playing to a crowd of your people, I would say?
My people.
Your people. Sure.
You people are all the same.
It's true. Well, you know, we speak in code, so yeah. I'm surprised you were there. Can understand any of it. No, it's really fun. I mean, I think it's funny sometimes being able to play into like the stereotypical jokes, you know, like I have one joke about like lesbians and cargo pants and like it's not rocket science. Like it's not like a clever joke, but it's just like it's going to kill because like, you know, like
it's funny. Yeah.
Like lesbians like hearing jokes about lesbians.
Yeah.
So it's easy, you know, but it's just really fun. The gay crowds are great. I'm super stoked about Ladies Comedy Night in a couple weeks, too.
We'll plug that real fast. When is that?
Yeah. It's August 4th. It's August 4th? My birthday. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Awesome,
so
how old?
If you don't mind me asking.
Oh, no, not at all.
Wait, how old do you think she is?
Oh, that's a good question.
I think you're 26.
Ooh.
I'm 27. I'm about to be 28. So,
look at you,
know.
Michael Cooper. If I'm the male version of Delilah, you're like the male Miss Cleo. I don't be able to tell.
I'm a little big psychic right now.
A little big psychic. Hmm?
That's why I can't talk.
I'm sensing some gongs, dude.
That's right.
I'm sensing them. Well, yeah. So August 4th, ladies' night. That's the shit.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Do you think Sean's going to go up?
God. He probably will. He'll probably put on a wig and just try to make it happen.
Oh, man. He absolutely fucking killed tonight. It was
that
so
would be
funny.
Hilarious. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that. It's going to be good stuff. I'm excited. I don't know. It's just really fun. I've only been doing this for, you know, almost a year now. So
you're naturally funny, though. You, I said in the intro, like, you make me wish every girl was gay because, like, the way, I don't know if it's just to speak, but that's the only thing I can associate it with. You just, like, hang tough. Like, I don't know. You just, like, in a conversation, you're just funny. Like, me and Tony B were out tonight, and she made a comment earlier. We were outside the spot, and she goes, when a bunch of guys get together, all they do is, like, start talking about their dicks. And then, like, 10 minutes later, we're outside, and me and Tony turn. Batman and Superman. We were talking about the Volkswagen bus, which I want to ask you about, by the way.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Batman and Superman, and then eventually it goes into shaving our pubes. But rather than shy away from it, like a lot of other girls that are annoying, not you, you just hang out and talk about the way you shave your pubes. This is going to get you that position into school board.
Awesome. Thank you.
It's all getting bleeped out and deleted.
That's great. Love
You've
it.
Only been doing stand-up a year.
Yeah, not even.
So what at 26 years old drew you to stand up? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, it was really random. So I took a class in college, actually, that was like a women's studies class. It was like humor and gender theory. And we studied a lot of female stand-up comedians. And part of our final exam
was it like just a little pamphlet? There was just like, I imagine how many women.
You know, that's what I thought too. But wait, I mean, it's a bunch. Like, you know, Phyllis Diller, Margaret Gomez, like Ellen, like Susan Weston, a lot of lesbies. But a lot of, a lot of lesbies. But some great, you know, Gilda Radner, great straight woman too.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so part of our final exam was we had to write and perform a 5-minute stand-up routine, and the class voted, and like I won out of the class. And
no,
so
shit.
My professor like pulled me aside and she was like, you're actually like, you're funny, like you should try this at some point. And I was like, yeah. And I kind of thought about it, but I think whenever I would think about going, I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna tell my friends and they're gonna want to go, and then if I bomb, and it's gonna be that really awkward thing where they're not gonna say like,
you did great,
you were really terrible, but they're gonna like leave and be like, yeah, shit's not good, that was not funny. She shouldn't do that anymore. But to my face, they'll be like, we're so proud of you. That was so great for your first time.
They do those weird comments where they go like, you just kept going. You know, like you weren't even faded by it.
You tried real hard. You know, you tried. And so I moved to Phoenix and I just didn't know.
Moved to Phoenix from where?
From San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yeah.
Now, does that play into the gay thing? Forgive like the... But I'm just curious. Does that?
It's true. They put, you know how some cities put fluoride in the water? Well, you know, San Francisco just puts gay in the water.
Yeah, just
so,
gay
you know,
in the water.
And also fluoride. So no cavities and you fuck someone of your same gender.
That's the shit. Shout out to San Francisco. That's
right,
amazing.
That's right. Did you
always know? If you don't mind me asking?
Well, hold on. Before you get that, I don't mean it in a way like something in the water, but I mean... It's a lot of gay culture in that area, right?
Yeah.
So I'm saying you were around it at an early age, right? Like you were in.
Well, I've lived in a bunch of cities. So I'm from Texas.
What part of Texas?
Farmers Branch, thriving cultural metropolis of Farmers Branch. You know us for our cow tipping, ladies and gentlemen. I'm from Farmers Branch. I live there. You know, went to college in Texas. Moved to Baltimore, and I lived in Baltimore for 3 years. And then I was in D.C. for a year, and then I was in Philly. And then I kind of went through this, like, I need to start my stuff over. I had a really stressful job. I wanted to kind of hit reset. And so I sold all of my stuff and I hitchhiked from Philadelphia to San Francisco. And I lived in a contemplative commune.
Get the fuck out of here.
Wait. When was all this? When you decided you were already moved out by the time you moved to all these places, right? Or were you moving with your family?
Oh, no.
Your whole family hitchhike from Philadelphia?
Well, obviously they weren't.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Partridge family, but we're all in a band. No, my family's all in Texas. It's really funny. I think they think I'm
Is that where you were born?
Yeah.
I was born in Dallas.
Oh,
and
really?
I lived in Maryland for a while, too.
Oh, that's
and my
awesome.
Dad's from Philadelphia. Hey. Kindred spirits.
Hey-o.
Same hair.
Yeah, that's right. That's why I have these luxurious brunette locks.
Yeah.
That's also why they kicked us out, because all the women are blonde in Dallas. So, you know, you can't stick around if you're a brunette in the area.
I couldn't find a man to save my life, let me tell you. Unbelievable.
I
just want honest man to honest work.
I just realized I went from us to women. I'm sorry about that.
it's okay.
So you do have long, luxurious locks, though, to your credit.
And a vagina. It's nice. It's right here in between my legs. Just a pussy.
I've seen it.
What? Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. What were you? You said, did you always know?
Yeah. Well, two questions. How old were you when you moved out or when you left to go on to all these different places? And did you always know? Yeah.
Yeah, I graduated college and I joined Teach for America. And so I just moved me to Baltimore. My family's all still in Texas. And so, yeah, it was just me. Before I get to your other question, it's funny because I feel like people in Texas don't really leave Texas. You know, it's like
Texas isn't even like part of the United States. It's just like exactly, some other thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I'm really an immigrant. Yeah. I'm an immigrant out of Texas.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, you know, it's the culture there is like you're born there. You love it. It is unquestionably the best place on earth. You would never dream of leaving. And if you do leave, it's like it's cute to leave for like a year or two so that you can say that you leave. Mm-hmm. But then you're supposed to come back. And so I think my family thought when I moved to Baltimore, like, oh, she's just doing her cute, like, go someplace other than Texas thing. And, you know, every year the earnestness by which they ask, when are you moving back home? Like, it's like their heart sinks a little more every year. Like, they're slowly realizing, like, it's just not going to happen for them. So, and as for the other question, I think it's interesting. Like, you know, there's definitely the spectrum, and I'm not like a far end gay girl, you know, it's not like I like knew my whole life, but I look back and I realize like, oh yeah, I was totally attracted to girls my whole life, but because I was also attracted to men, I didn't really have to grapple with that.
Yeah.
And it's actually funny. My girlfriend now, is the first woman that really like knocked me off center. Like I was I met her and I was like, I don't know what to do with the feelings that I have for you. And it was really confusing. I handled it really, really poorly.
What's her name?
Her name's Kelly.
Shout out to Kelly.
Yeah, she's great.
The lovely Kelly.
And nothing happened. I just was really confused and handled it really poorly. And then I moved to San Francisco and I met another woman that I was attracted to. And then I was like, okay, well, it's clearly a trend. Like, this has clearly happened multiple times.
Well, that's
now.
Cool that you, okay, yeah. So you're from Texas and your whole family's from Texas, and that's conservative and very like homegrown country roots, like you're talking about, right?
Oh,
am I right?
Yeah. I mean, I went home a couple, I guess maybe a month and a half ago. I was home for 36 hours. The rapture came up 3 times. That's, in case you're not a math person, that's an average of one rapture conversation per 12 hours. they're very evangelical, conservative.
That being the case, you had in the way you grew up, were you, so when you just the way you casually just said it, you said like, oh, this is a trend. I'm just going to eat pussy or whatever. Again, back to the teacher thing. I'm sorry. So you didn't have any like pulling at yourself, like any kind of like what is my family gonna think? Like, what are they gonna think if they find me doing this? Like,
oh god, no, it was awful. So I was living in a Christian contemplative commune in San Francisco, and so I was like really struggling with these feelings. I told them I was like I don't know what to do. Like I'm and so what they did is they sent me to Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings. So
that's fucking insane.
So fun fact, not a sex addict. Not even close.
Not yet,
and so I was at these meetings and I literally, you know, slept with one woman, and I'm at Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings. I'm in a monogamous relationship with one woman and I'm at these sex addicts meetings.
That's so
fun. And everyone's sharing their stories, you know, and they're sex addicts. And so their stories of like, you know, I wrecked another marriage, or, you know, I had another, you know, orgy or like whatever, all this stuff. And I'm not judging. We all have our stuff, but I just didn't have anything to contribute to the conversation. But when you keep going to like 12-step meetings, if you don't say anything, people assume that you're being judgmental. You know, they assume that
you're holding back,
that you're not dealing with your stuff. And so I don't believe I'm admitting this, but after I'd been there for a while, I was just like, I just have to start lying. Like, I have to start participating. And so for like a couple months, I went to Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings and I just lied. I listened to their stories and I was like, yeah, me too. Just more sex that I had, you know, because of the addiction that I have, you know?
Up to here in sex, just to my neck.
And so, so needless to say, after a little bit of that, I was like, you know what? Like, I just need to like this. This is, there's nothing, I'm not the person with the problem, you know? And so
you need to go out and collect some stories of your own, right? So you started being crazy and decided you became a sex addict?
No, absolutely.
Oh, no. Different conversation for
No. I moved out of my Christian commune and into an apartment and came out to my family. Did not go well. But they're coming around, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's funny. Come out, coming around. It's weird how it's all the same conversation. Christian commune, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, so it's basically like, it was like Jesus hippies. So basically like the San Francisco, you know, like, yeah, we did like anti-war demonstrations and marches and stuff. And
did you grow up fairly religious? Is that why you were drawn to a Christian? I mean, obviously.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I went to evangelical school, K through 12, and it was like super evangelical. So here's how evangelical I grew up. When I was in the third grade, I was in a documentary on the extinction of the dinosaurs from a creationist perspective.
To test faith, right?
Which, well, no, in case you were curious what the theory is, the creationist perspective on how the dinosaurs became extinct is that they coexisted with men, and there was a bubble around the earth, and that when Noah's... I'm not making this up. There was a bubble.
I know you're not.
There was a bubble around the earth. And then when Noah's flood happened, God popped the bubble, and that's where all the rain came from, the flood. But all of the oxygen escaped into the atmosphere. Dinosaurs have very tiny lungs, and so they suffocated, and that's why the dinosaurs were extinct.
It makes sense because they're so much smaller than us, right?
So they have very small lungs. Yeah.
That's fucking insane.
Yeah. So, you know.
So you know, when you found this out, like, what, a year ago, that wasn't true? Or, like, did you just learn? Or
yeah, it was a slow process. Like, yeah. I was very religious for most, I mean.
You were, right?
Most of my life, just very earnest. But I was kind of apologetic about it. You know, it was like, shoot, like I know I have to believe this because the Bible says so, but I hate it. You know, like, I felt like I struggled with it a lot. And so it's been great. Like, I don't, you know. It's really interesting when you grow up in a really religious culture and then you're not anymore. There's always that like period where you're like, am I going to hell? Is that what's happening? But
well, you're a rebel is what it is. And you obviously want to cut your own path in the world. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have a stepbrother who's a couple years older than me.
And you're an only child besides that?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah, just me.
Yeah, no wonder when you go back to Texas, they're talking about all sorts of different things. They want you to come back. No wonder. Wow.
Yeah, I know. And I think they don't realize that they can still have grandchildren even though I'm gay. Like, it's like, I promise, like, you know, family is still an option, you know?
Oh, my God. So you went, all right, so you went and you did the Jesus commune.
Yeah, I did the Jesus commune. Well, yeah.
Christian commune, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, which Jesus commune works, yeah.
So you're in San Francisco for a while, and you're with this second girl, and you've already done the five-minute set in college where you want to do stand-up. And was this even a thought in your head that you wanted to do stand-up? Do I have that timeline correct?
Yeah, the timeline's correct, but, I mean, it wasn't really a thought in my head at all. It was just you know, I'd been busy, like, work was busy, and it just didn't really occur to me, you know?
What were you doing for work?
I work in education. I work for an education.
You have
nonprofit.
A teacher vibe. You have a very patient, very understanding, very nurturing. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. My students would tell you I was not very nurturing.
What age? What?
I taught high school. I love being a teacher. It was great. I love working in education. But yeah, I taught high school in Baltimore City. And then I coached teachers for a little bit in Philly, and then I recruited them, and then I went back and I worked at a school in San Francisco, and then I've been doing the nonprofit thing again for the past couple years.
That's really cool. Yeah. And then out of nowhere, you were like, I'm a teacher, and now I'm doing comedy? Like, you just...
I mean, honestly, I moved to Phoenix, and I was like, okay, I don't know anyone, like, not a soul in this city, so... Now is a perfect time to try this because if I'm going to go into this club, I'm not going to know anyone. Mm-hmm. And so if it goes terribly, then who cares? You know, I'm never going to have to see these people again. And so I went to one open mic night at the Comedy Spot just to kind of watch and get a feel for the venue. I went up for open mic night in August. Mm-hmm. It went really well. And then my next show, I opened for Bernadette Polly.
Get the fuck out of here.
So, wow, yeah, I've just kind of been in the rotation since then. It's been great.
You already had comfort. Yeah, you have been. And you're very funny, by the way. I don't know if you've ever seen her do stuff.
Oh, yeah.
She's fucking hilarious.
You impressed me. The first time I saw you go up.
Oh, thanks, man.
You made fun of the crowd and called them out, and it was hilarious.
Do you think you having a teaching background helps? You kind of, because you're used to taking control.
Well,
of
I'll tell
people.
You, nothing gets you used to hecklers like teaching.
Yeah. Oh, I bet.
Yeah. No, but I think the planning piece comes in. I think like one thing you see a lot in like the kind of the comedian world is people are just like, I'm really funny. You know, I'm just going to go up there and like be my awesome, funny self and be amazing. And like, I kind of had that mentality when I started teaching. I was like, I'm just really smart and charismatic. And like, I'm just going to go up there. And like, you learn really early on, like you have to have a plan.
Yep.
You know, you really have to have a plan and you have to know your plan or it's not going to go well for you. Right. And so I think when I'm on stage, I try to seem like I'm really like laid back and going with the flow, but I'm actually like a very like control freak person, and like I need to have the things really down, you know, I need to think, like, to practice when I'm in a way to be, like, I'm very, you know.
Well, that allows you to have the confidence that you have when you do go on the stage.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a lot of, what's nice is when you did bring up the thing and look at your hand like that, but you weren't, like, a lot of people freak out and they go, like, just a second.
Just a second.
Hold on. And they're like, oh, you just kind of brought it up. You're like, hey, like, do you want me to finish? I'm going to fucking tell another joke, but I got to do this. And you just did it. Like, your presence is very fucking, it's nice to watch, you know?
Thanks.
So have you bombed? Have you eaten shit?
Well, and this is one of my jokes in my act, actually. But the one time I've been badly heckled, it was actually really funny. So, you know, when you're up on stage. Oh, shoot. I'm bumping the mic. So when you're up on stage and the lights are up there, so you can see like the first couple rows. But everyone in the back, it's just, you know, you can't see anything. And so I did it was a Sunday night show. So it was one of those weird, like, who knows what the crowd is going to be like situations. And I'd done a pretty straight act. And then at the very end, I made a joke that somehow revealed I was gay. I don't remember what it was. And I hear this voice in the back of the room go, "Fag!" Like, really loud.
Oh, no.
Holy shit.
And I'm not going to lie, my very first reaction was like, hold on, okay, I'm a dyke, all right? get your homophobic slurs correct, all right, sir? That's not accurate. But, you know, I hadn't really thought about how I would respond to a heckler, and I couldn't see who said it. And so I just said the very first thing that came to mind, which was really lame. And it was, you know, I can't really see, you know, who you are right now, but, you know, no, that's not what I said. Shit.
I know this joke.
But I was like, you know, you shouldn't really mess with the person with the microphone because, you know, you're just a blob of darkness right now. But I'll find you after the show. Well, turns out that larger African-American women don't appreciate being referred to as blobs of darkness.
Oh my god.
Needless to say, I did not de-escalate the heckling. It just went up from there. Yeah. So that was a really rough show. But other than that, you know, I mean, there's definitely some shows where, like, they're small, you know, and people just, like, don't laugh hard. Yeah. And, like, you know, you kind of panic a little. But I don't think I really bombed other than that. There's just been, like, you know. I think I'm, like, at the end of the night, I never feel like I'm the funniest person by any stretch, but I also never feel like I'm the worst. You know, I always feel like I'm in the middle somewhere.
Oh, that's great. You should tell me what I was going to say, because I completely forgot what I was going to say.
You should look at your hand really awkwardly.
I'm trying to bring up my elephant trunk here.
That's right. There you go.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Cooper. How's work going? This is what I did at the. I did this at the 8 o'clock show. I completely forgot tonight. Shout out to the Comedy Spot. Thank you for letting me go up. I completely forgot what I was talking about, and I looked at the girl in the front, and I was like, "Do you ever forget your jokes?" And she was like, "I completely forgot," and I had to pull up my phone and fucking look at it.
Oh my gosh. He was great. There was these, like, really, like, beefy dudes sitting in the front tonight. Like, they just look like, they honestly looked like second rate bouncers. Like, they look like the type, it's like, you're big, but you probably couldn't run a mile and a half, you know, like that kind of scenario.
Out of shape.
He just kind of looks at them, and he was just like, well, you're very meaty guys right here. And he just started calling one of them, like, ham sandwich the whole show. He's like, yeah, you and ham sandwich over there. It was so funny. So funny.
That's the best is what I try and do then is try and if you have somebody in the front row and like you were saying, you'll get in there, you don't have any problem talking to people, but you try and pick somebody out and then just keep making fun of them, so if it doesn't hit, you just like bring it back to them. You go like, what do you think about that deli meat? And you just like to say it, and then you have something to back you up, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. So comedy, what's your future in it? Do you want to keep doing it? Do you want to, I mean, you're good at it, you don't seem to have your spirit seems not broken, like you don't seem like a regular comic. There are a lot of people we talk to or we meet at places where you see them and after a while you catch a look in their eye and they're just like, I'm really hurt on the inside, you know? You don't seem to have that. You seem to be strong and good, like, so it's just a fun thing for you. What do you like?
Yeah, well, I'm glad that I don't seem like a broken soul, you know. especially since I told you about my fun 12-step experience. But no,
what I mean to say is you got it all out of the way already.
You know, I just really like, you know, I really like it. I feel like, you know, I feel like my day job, I love it. It's very serious. I think, like, I actually read something. Have you read Bossy Pants, Tina Fey's book?
No, I haven't read it, but I'm sure it's funny.
It's so funny. And she has this great piece where she talks about, like the people that work at Saturday Night Live. And she's like, you know, all the men are sort of bad boys and they're rule breakers and they're kind of, you know, slackers or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's like, and all the women are very much like good law abiding, like, you know, like daughters and mothers and sisters and like, you know, and she talks about how like comedy is kind of their venue to like be incorrect, you know, like that's kind of how they get it out. And I feel like that's true for me too. Like, I feel like my real world self, I just, you know, I just want to be like a really good law-abiding, decent citizen. And it's just kind of fun to be able to go up on stage and, like, you
say
know,
whatever the fuck
say whatever you want. You know, make fun of people, make fun of yourself, like, just kind of get it out there. So, in answer to your question, I don't think a Comedy Central is going to be knocking on my door anytime soon. I don't really think I have a future in comedy, but I really love it, and I've met great people doing it, and so I have every intention of, you know, riding this train until they kick me off. So
that's the fucking shit. That's really cool that you say that. That's, like, refreshing. I was talking to shout out Eric O'Shea, and wow, I cannot remember shit today. I am fucking so stupid today.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, for real.
Every day.
Wow, weirdly enough, Brian Kuhatsu. That was the other guy. I was talking to them tonight about how they were just saying, like, just have fun and enjoy it. And I was like, yeah, that's exactly what it is. And it's nice to hear other people talk like that. Everyone does seem to have this attitude. They won't say it out loud, but they're like, oh, I deserve this and I deserve that. Nah, it's just fucking fun. Like, you know, you got your day job and whatever else. So you were going to work for the fucking CIA?
That was a real smooth transition.
Yeah, that's
there,
how
Frank.
We do it. Male Delilah. Male Delilah.
I mean, with that sultry voice, you know, with that sultry voice of yours,
yeah,
you can
right.
pull it off smooth like butter over there.
Rachel
Yeah, so we were talking about this earlier tonight when we were, I think it was when we were hanging out in the rain. We actually had rain today in Arizona.
That's pretty
noteworthy. But yeah, I.
Jarrett
Nez
did a little dancing outside the Comedy Spot. Just kidding. All right, he's an Indian. Shout out Jarrett. Anyway, go on. Move on. I mean, I'm hitting so flat today. Keep going,
pretty
please,
racist.
By the way.
When I was living in D.C., I couldn't really figure out, like, what I wanted my next job move to be. And so for some reason, at, like, 4 in the morning, I kid you not, it was 4 in the morning, I got on the CIA's website, and I'd had a couple of glasses of wine, and I filled out the whole application, checked a bunch of boxes, and honestly, like, woke up the next day and, like, didn't really think about it again because I'd done all this stuff at, like, 4 in the morning.
When I have glasses of wine, I do not, like, sign up for the CIA. I go, like, I smoke cigarettes and I go, like, fucking government. Well, they're out to get me.
Oh, my gosh. You avoid the government.
At all costs.
At all costs. And logging on. Yeah. Wine is great because it's in between beer and liquor. It'll get you fucked up on the best amount of shit. It's like either side. Wow, I don't know what the
it's
fuck.
A very nice drone.
It's a very nice
drone.
He's
doing, like, kind of, you can't really see it, but he's got kind of, like, a food pyramid going on of liquor.
I was going to say, if beer's on one end and liquor's on the other, it's where they both meet,
yes.
But at a higher point.
Yep.
God, I'm so...
It's okay. Thank God you're pretty.
Oh, Jesus Christ. The male Delilah. Oh, my God.
So I applied at, like, 4 in the morning, woke up the next day, didn't really think much about it, and a couple weeks later, I get, like, this call. It's, like, a blocked or, like, an unknown number that's calling.
Is this Rachel Hinton?
And I answer, and it was literally, like, this is so-and-so with the Central Intelligence Agency. And they sent me, like, you know, they wanted...
Did you know what they were talking about at first, or did you just...
Well, it's funny, because I remembered applying. So it wasn't, like...
Why
the
fuck did you apply for the CIA?
Like,
I can't understand. And what position did you apply for?
That's
like,
the best part.
General
intelligence?
No,
yourself
no.
an agent before, or was it just...
Just wait for it.
Teacher?
Just wait
CIA
for it.
CIA
so,
teacher.
God, I know. The funny thing is I'm a pacifist. That's the really funny part. I don't know. I think I just had watched a spy movie or something, and it sounded intriguing. So they call, and I remember, like...
I do that to all movies, so watch them,
I
go, like, I could
I'll
so
do that.
Do that.
Yeah,
not a problem.
I want to drive a, you know, a Mini Cooper, like, I don't know. And so, they send me these, like, electronic tests, and one of them's, like, kind of a personality test to, you know, basically figure out if you're, like, really unhappy or depressed.
You were on board. You wanted to do this.
Well, I was just, like, I'm like, an overachiever, and so I didn't really want to do it, but I wanted to, again, take that train as long as it would carry me. And so,
at least, yeah.
And there's, like, a problem-solving activity, and so then they invited me to, like, the all-day interview thing. And I can't tell you the details because they do make you sign a waiver where you can't talk about the details.
Did you tell a bunch of made-up sex stories?
Do
you run your same bits?
But I will say it was funny because, like, it was literally all these, like, former military white guys. And then there was, like, a few token, like, people of color. And there was, like, one other, like, token woman. And then it was me. And I remember, you know, in kind of the interview component, there's a lot of, like, group stuff. But then, like, the one-on-one interview component, like... This woman's looking at my resume and she's like, so you're a teacher? Like, it's just like, yeah, I know everyone else is, like, out of the Marine Corps, but I worked in Baltimore City Public School, so that's gonna count for something. But anyway, I'm going through this whole process, and it wasn't until the very end I remembered applying, but I couldn't remember what boxes I had checked because I was so arbitrary. I was definitely in the interview process to be a polygrapher, so basically like an interrogator.
Get the fuck out of here.
Like,
are you serious?
Being trained to like give people a polygraph. And so, I didn't actually get, like, a legit job offer, but what they do is if you move forward in the process, they mail you this, like, 62-page, like, packet of papers that basically you have to sign off on so that they can start the, you know, 1-year, 2-year process of, like, calling everyone you know, combing through your finances, doing like a deep background search, and you have to sign off to give them permission to do that.
That's so good.
And so that's when I was like, I got the packet in the mail and I was like, I'm not going to take this
You were
job.
Like, fuck like, this, I'm out of wine. I'm not going to go
exactly.
through.
Exactly. The Franzia ran out, so I can't protect our government
You did the
anymore.
First half of the packet on beer, and then you tried vodka. Right. You know what? Exactly. It's not really fun anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is really funny. This is actually why I don't drink very much. Like, I'm definitely like a glass of wine or a beer at dinner kind of girl, because if I have too much to drink, I fucking apply to the CIA.
That's
like I do.
So
like some people, you know, some people hook up. I apply for intense government jobs.
That's the shit. So, that is so funny.
This is why I don't
cool.
handle my liquor very well.
You told me earlier tonight that you spent a good chunk of your, maybe life savings buying a Volkswagen bus on eBay when you were how old?
21.
21. Why did you do that?
Honestly, my parents had come in town to visit, and I was just, like, stressed out, and, like, they were asleep, and I couldn't really go anywhere, and I got on eBay for the very first time in my whole life, and within 2 hours, my life savings was gone, and I owned a Volkswagen bus.
Oh, my God.
And so, yeah, I went and picked it up from, like, Amish country.
Oh, kept it shout out Aaron Anko.
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to Aaron Anko. Had it for 8 months, could never figure out how to like parallel park it in Baltimore because it was a huge, you know, 1960 something bus.
Stick, right?
So it just lived at the Safeway parking lot. I like made friends with the guys mm-hmm. that worked at Safeway, and I was like, please don't tell me I can't parallel park this in my neighborhood. And I would come after school and I would try to drive it around, and I just couldn't get it down. So I sold it 8 months later for almost exactly what I paid for it. So fast forward a year, I do the same thing again. I literally, the second time I've ever been on eBay
God.
In my whole life, another bus was for sale.
Get
I bought,
the fuck
I bought another bus.
You still had other the original bus.
No, so I bought it, sold it 8 months later for exactly what I paid for it. So didn't make a profit, didn't lose money, just like bought it and then sold it again.
Yeah, go ahead.
But a year later, just on an impulse, did the exact same thing and bought a different bus. Just I think I want to own one so badly. And as soon as I bought it, I was just like, I'm an idiot. Like I couldn't drive the other one. I'm not gonna be able to drive this one. And so I actually resold it before I even picked it up. Like I never actually saw the bus, and I made a $500 profit on
That's
it.
What I'm talking about. See, you know so, what make you know what's so interesting about you, and I'm realizing this talking to you, this is what makes you like, I don't know, it makes my brain tick or stimulate or whatever. See, you're like 95% very organized. You're a teacher. You're very, like, you have your plan. This, but then there's like 5% of you that, like, fucking buys shit on eBay, buses, and applies for the CIA. And like,
goes
you know,
hitchhiking.
Like, goes like. Hitchhiking. Like, you have this 5% of you that, like, you're like, well, if I'm going to fucking fuck around, I'm going to fuck around. And you, like, do some crazy shit. Like, that's so interesting. Has this been, I mean, how would you describe that? Why do you do that? Is that how you've always been
yeah.
in your life?
Kind of how I've always been. Yeah.
Just spontaneous and you yeah. just like to have fun?
Yeah. So one of my favorite
God, don't you wish every girl like, isn't it like she's the best? Like
so one of my favorite childhood stories is when I was in the third grade, we had a talent show
mm-hmm.
and I played the piano, but like everyone played the piano. So I was like, I'm not gonna play the piano because everyone's gonna play the piano.
Us a broke ass with, never played the
I
piano.
Need,
we had like recorders.
It was a funny thought. Yeah.
No everybody played the piano at Graham's Academy.
Oh, come on now. But I was like, shoot, I was like, I don't want to do that. And so I went through my house. I was just like looking for inspiration, trying to find a new talent. And I found this like dance outfit that my mom had when she was in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So because I was like, whatever, I'm 5'10", because I was like the world's swarthiest third grader, I fit into my mom's yeah. middle school dance outfit. And it looked like something Elvis would wear. So I just decided like my talent is going to be I'm going to lip sync to Elvis. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Yeah.
And so I did this and it just like killed at like the third grade talent show. And so for the next couple of weeks, whenever the teacher would like leave the class to go take attendance or something and we would like be quietly working, the students would start like pounding their desks and going like, Elvis, Elvis,
get the fuck out
of
here.
So I would go to the front of the room to like, you know, recreate ranked. And inevitably my teacher would walk in like right as I'm like, you know, in full Elvis pose in the front of the classroom. And so being such a goody two shoes, she pulled me aside after she caught me doing this a few times, and she was like, Rachel, if I come into the class again and I find you doing Elvis when I'm not there, we're going to have a parent-teacher conference.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, that was the day Elvis died because I wasn't about to get in trouble.
Oh, man.
So.
It would have been great yeah. if she would have pulled into, like, if I find you doing Elvis again, like, without me being in the room, I really appreciate your act and you do a good impression. Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah. That was hack. That was some hack-ass shit. So what happened? All right, so let's go back a little bit. What happened then? Because I feel like we jumped over the part where you left some, like, Jesus camp, and then you went to here. Like, what happened in that? How old were you when you were at this commune? You were how old? 22?
24, 25.
I feel like you're so much older than, not like that sounds messed, that sounds fucked up, but you seem like so much wiser than Coop and I, and we're 24 and 25 years old. Why is that? Is that because you're a teacher, great one?
I don't know. I think I'm an old soul. I think I am. Yeah. I think I'm just, I don't know.
When's your birthday?
Well, August 4th.
August 4th? Comedy night. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's right. You already told us. Man, I'm so off the mark today. It's unbelievable.
Oh, it's all good. So I was in the commune. I turned 25, like, within a week of getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lived there less than a year because, you know, with the gay thing, I left. So. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. And so what brought me to Phoenix was basically I got a promotion about the same time. Relationship of 2 years was in kind of a rocky spot, and it just seemed like a good time to, you know, we kind of ended and I moved.
Always a good time to exit.
We ended and I moved, and you know, it's hard to, you know, it just, you know, when you're going to kind of heartbroken and, you know, it seemed like a good time to move out of state. So. Yeah.
Give yourself some space.
Yeah. And honestly, I was not excited about moving to Phoenix. Like, my boss asked me to move, and I was like, no.
I don't blame
you. I was like,
you.
And then she was like, you know, what about just for 2 years? And I was like, absolutely not. But I got here, and like, Phoenix is actually kind of great. Like, it, you know, it's really grown on me. I like it a lot. No, I do.
It's its own kind of California without an ocean.
Yeah. Well,
I just find the people dry, like the environment's dry, like everything. Yeah. And every year I always love, we do the same thing that we go, fuck, it's so fucking hot. But like, we all live here. Right. Like, you know, it's
like
insane.
We're living in Satan's armpit. Mm-hmm. Of course it's hot.
It seems to me like the people who settled in California, I said that backwards, in Arizona, it's because California was like full or something. Do you know what I mean? Like, doesn't it seem like everyone was traveling west to get to like the good shit? And then
yeah, it's like when you pour a beer too fast and the foam comes over. It's like Arizona's like the beer foam.
Yeah,
California.
We are the head. Yeah. We are head.
We are the head. Exactly. Yeah.
So Working It Out, have you ever been on the show? Are you familiar with it?
Yeah, totally. So the Working It Out crew, I'm kind of like the token Leslie. Mm-hmm. So we did Pride together. I'm in a long distance relationship. And so before I was out of town, you know, every weekend almost, or busy almost every weekend. I was like kind of on the, you know, one of the regular hosts. So
yeah.
I've been on like, I don't know, maybe 5 of their podcasts.
It is so cool. Yeah. I walked in there. Gene gives me this address. He goes like, it's 4815 North 3rd Street.
Yeah.
And I pull up to this like shack of a place.
I know.
No, listen here. You don't know, because I pull up to the shack. Or maybe you do know, actually. And there's some old guy like cleaning out front. I woke up like, I'm here for Gene Moore. And he's like, who's this? And I was like, I'm sorry, I'm here for Ernesto Ortiz. He was like, we don't have that here. Maybe next door. Gene gives me the wrong fucking address. I'm at the wrong building.
Oh, no.
But anyway, the place next to it, it's kind of a shack of a place as well.
Yeah.
You go inside and it's like the coolest, air conditioned, mind you. Nicest studio. And they have like fucking iPads and iPods, everything like with crane arms, and they have sound effects and intros. It was the coolest shit ever.
Wow. Yeah.
They mentioned you though, and it was really cool, and they talked about how you did good on Thursday, and besides that, I didn't really say much. It's a jarred, I guess. Yeah.
I love those guys. Yeah.
So when do you go on? Are you going back on? Do you want to be on the show anymore?
Yeah, totally. It's just hard. I it's like off my radar screen sometimes when I'm here, just because I'm out of town so much. But no, they're great. I need to go back. I love those guys.
It was absolutely cool. They had cameras set up in every corner, and they like went live, and they had cameras on everybody.
Yeah.
Straight Nate, shout out to that guy. He's funny as shit.
Was there like a crew like doing stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Also like moving the cameras and changing angles and stuff.
So they have and I was calling him Rich all day, and it was really embarrassing. His name's Eric. Shout out to Eric. He's very cool.
We watched the Hunger Games last night.
Did you really? Well, that's why you got brought up, because he said he was hanging out with you, and he said you were coming over to do this.
He's the best kept secret in Phoenix. He's a great guy.
No, he's really cool. And he just hung out, and he just like ran everything, did it, got on the mic a few times. Very cool dude.
Yep. Yeah, I feel like the Working It Out crew, it's like we're like a dysfunctional family, you know?
It's very funny.
You know, it's one of those where like we're all mean to each other, but then we sit out at Thanksgiving and hold hands and the love is there.
Watch the Hunger Games together.
Exactly. Watch the Hunger Games, exactly.
Gay Pride, how was that? Where was it? How was it? What are the details? What do you do?
Yeah. So Pride's awesome. Fun fact, I'm on the board of directors for Phoenix Pride. So
really?
I'm very, very, very invested in Phoenix Pride and our success.
Yeah.
But no, it was great. It was really funny. Like, we performed on the main stage at one point, and we did 3 different shows across Pride.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was at basically like the S&M tent, for lack of a better way to put it. So you look at the schedule for what's supposed to happen, and it's literally like, you know, bondage, like student professor role play. And then it's like, you know, stand-up comedy with the working out crew. And it's like, one of these things is not like the others, you know? And so these people come in, and they've got all, like, their leather stuff
There's,
on,
like, a
and,
microphone
you know,
with chains attached
exactly,
to it that you tell
they're
jokes.
They're expecting this, like, kinky, sexy stuff, and instead it's up there, and I'm like, so my mom said the funniest thing the other day. But it was actually really funny. Like, people came in expecting something really different, but they stuck around because it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then we did the main stage, and I feel like one thing I like about performing at smaller comedy clubs is it feels intimate, you know? Like, folks pack
oh,
in there.
Oh, that's the best thing ever.
And, like, the laughter is, like, bouncing off the walls, and it's dark, and it's like, you're all, you know, we're all in this together. We performed at the main stage at Pride, and it's like, I mean, it's huge. You know, it's huge, just, you know, fancy.
How many people would you say?
I mean, when the area is full, I mean, it probably holds, I don't know, 3,000, 4,000 under
the
tent.
Like
it's a big tent, you know? But it was like the middle of the afternoon and people aren't crammed in the way that they are for music festivals. So there are probably a couple hundred people there, but they're all kind of spread out on this like grassy lawn and like the closest person to you is probably 50 yards away. And so it was a pretty rough show because it's like, you know, you're telling jokes and you don't hear any feedback at all. Like you hear some, but it's like, everyone's so far away. And you know, people came up later and they're like, oh my gosh, you guys were great, you guys were hysterical, but it didn't feel like we were hysterical.
That's
it just
weird,
felt
though.
Like we're kind of telling jokes into this big vacuum,
a huge stadium.
Yeah, it was rough.
That's weird for comedy. Like, it's cool because it still works, but that's weird. Like, it's like you said, it's not your preferred format or room.
And our heads are on these like big screens. They have like the cameras on, so it's like, oh, neat.
Do they pay you in like ball gags, the SNM tent or whatever, or do
Well, we brought it around, obviously.
Yeah, you brought it. Thank you very much. Stand-up comic.
There you go.
Absolutely. The comedy spot is way nicer because you get to play in a room like that. Have you ever played a place called The Shout House?
Oh, yeah, I did the Shout House show. I'm doing the Shout House show in August, actually.
I'll be on that one, too.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, we can do it together.
Yeah, that's a really fun place.
It is. It was just, it's more of the vibe of like a huge open room where it's weird. You're in like the middle, you're talking, you can see like window panels, you can see like people like walking by. It's like I like the closed room atmosphere. It's much nicer.
Yep. I think one thing I have a hard time too is I think the crowd in Glendale, I think, is a little more conservative than the crowd in Scottsdale. I haven't really quite figured out how to like full on change my act midway through, because I feel like, you know what I mean, like sometimes you can be like a joke or two into a set and you're like nope, they're not going to think the same things are funny that I think are funny. Like the jokes that I have planned,
they're not buying.
Are not gonna go well. And so I'm trying to get better about like the in the moment change, but that's always rough when you realize you're like, oh, look at this elderly couple in the front. Like they're not gonna find my vibrator jokes amusing.
They say it's never the crowd, it's the comic, but sometimes it is the crowd a little bit. Like I told one at the 8 o'clock show tonight, and it was rest in peace, Adam or whatever. And it's said, I'm glad your friend's dead. And I didn't even get groans like the joke was funny. That was just off limits. It was just kind of like, oh, God. Like that guy you made up in your story on stage was offensive. I was like, oh, fuck you guys. You know, like.
I feel like it's also hard sometimes because like there's the things that I actually think are funny. And then there's the things that I know will go over well with the crowd. Like, I think like I'm a total geek. Like if I could just write what I think is funny, I would never get laughs because I would say things like, well, Elizabeth Warren on MSNBC the other day, let's talk about that. You know, like I'd want to make these like really smart jokes and like, you know, people just don't care for lack of a way to put it. And so I feel like sometimes when I write and I prep for a show, like there are literally jokes that I write that I'm like, I don't actually think this is that funny, but this is going to kill. This is going to kill.
What's your writing process like then? So you go, your approach is, you think, I try and, you seem to be very like life oriented in your set and everything. So do you choose to write stuff from you personally? And then how do you get that out of your head and onto paper and then onto the stage? Like, what do you do?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like there's a couple of different things. Like, I think one is I want to be like an observational, you know, comic. Yeah. Like I want to just take things like everyone experiences and kind of point out
what's
funny.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think I also want to do more character work. So I think like my ideal style is I think about like people that I think are types of like caricatures of people that I think are really funny. Like a lot of like stuff from the South or like certain types of women or certain types of men. And I try to get like a good voice and a good impression going on. So I think that's one lane. But I think sometimes I just think about stuff that like everyone can relate to and just try to make it into joke form. You know, like I have a bit for Ladies Comedy Night that's a little bit about like the Brazilian wax process, which
laser accuracy.
Exactly. It's something that women, you know, are a lot of women have had some sort of bikini wax done. And it's just, you know, it's like, it's just a universally awkward experience. Like there's just no relationship in the world where you go and you're like, hi, you're some teenager. I've never met you before. I'm about to strip down completely naked, and you're about to get more up close and personal in my body than like most people I actually date are in this brightly lit room.
With brightly
lit. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, that's just weird. Like, that's part of normal life, but it's like, that is so bizarre, you know? So I don't know. I try to think about stuff like that and get punchy with it. I'm not really good at like jokes, you know, like I just more try to like tell stories in an interesting and kind of punchy and animated way.
But it's funny though. Like jokes are like, I'd rather like have like what you do. I'd rather, if I'm going to do it, I'd rather tell like a story or make it kind of punchy or something funny and have it be more from you than try and be like, so the other day I'm punching my girlfriend in the face. Like some stupid shit, like, you know, whatever, just to get the punchline.
Yeah.
So you write a lot?
I do. I try to like, I try to just do a lot of new stuff. You know, I think I get bored if I do the same set too many times. And so I try to really keep it new and keep it fresh. I think like I want to avoid just falling into the things that are easy to do too. You know, like, I mean, like it's Arizona, like you can always get a laugh with the race stuff. Like you can just any sort of racial joke, like, you know, there's a million different ways that you can make fun of Mexicans and get laughs, you know, whether in a really mean way or whether in more of a, you know, a camaraderie kind of way. But like that's just like, that's easy pickings in Arizona because of our climate here. But it's like, I don't want to do that. You know, like, I don't want to just tell a
sex
joke.
You want to be universally
funny. I don't want to just tell a race joke. Like I want to do something that's different, you know? And I don't know. Yeah, I think sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, for somebody who says you don't think Comedy Central is going to be knocking on your door, you definitely have like a very interesting and refreshing approach to comedy in the way you do it. Like, you're not going for low-hanging fruit, which is what we do here at Amateur Hour, by the way.
That's our motto around here.
Low-hanging fruit, that's what it is. Slim pickings, you know? But it's nice that you actually like pursue it in that way. Like, I don't know, a lot of different things.
Yeah.
A lot of different things, you know.
We'll see. Deep thoughts with Swift. Here we go.
All right, we'll do some quick questions. What's your favorite color?
Favorite color?
Yeah, do you have favorite color?
You really want me to answer that? I'm so boring.
Please don't answer that.
I'm so lame that we have to go to the what is your favorite color topic.
Please go to your favorite color. What's going on with you, Coop? What's new with you? How's the night shift going?
Oh, the night shift.
Let's just get off this shit over here. You know what I'm saying?
You played two shows tonight?
Two shows. Don't turn this back on me. And you're not a terrible guest. I'm just fucking around. I did two shows, yes. And what is your favorite color?
My favorite color is purple.
Purple.
It's a very gay answer.
Yeah, that's all right. Did you? So you were always attracted to women? That's just, I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's hard, right? Like, it's easier to be straight than it is to be gay. So, like, if you're at all attracted to men.
Bullshit.
It's
so much easier to be gay from my perspective.
Not
looking
growing up in Farmers Branch, Texas. Come on, let's be real.
Yeah.
Going to evangelical school. So I think like if you are at all attracted to men, which I am, then why in the world would you deal with that? And so I think I just didn't, you know, I look back now and I think about girls that at the time I just thought like, I just really admire them. I just want to hang out with them. Like, I want to, you know, be their friend. And I look back now and I'm like, no, I wanted to make out with them. You know, but I didn't think that at the time. You know, I just thought like, oh, I just, she's just this cool older girl that I just want to be like. It's like, no, you had a crush on her. Like,
oh, that's
on,
crazy,
you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess I've always been attracted to women, but I wouldn't say that that's something I've always known about myself.
That's really cool though. I mean, like, that's cool that you can just understand it on that level. Like, I don't know, you're very laid back about the whole thing, which is nice.
I think it's hard. Like, because I'm feminine, you know, I think people get more upset. Like, I think in some ways it's harder when you come out because people think you're just like doing it to fuck with them, you know? Like I feel like if I was this like really butch girl and I'd like worn, you know, army boots my whole life and like, you know, looked a little bit more like stereotypically lesbian, when you come out, people are like, well, of course you're gay, you know, come on. And I think my mom, you know, took it especially hard because it's just like, you could have a boyfriend. Like, you've had boyfriends. Like, why are you?
Like, she didn't get
why
it.
Are you, why are you doing this to me? I think is a little bit more the response, you know? So.
Have your parents ever come to a show?
Oh, they never will. No.
Never?
Well, they still live in Texas. So, I mean, that physically.
But they don't come down here to, like, visit you?
No, I mean, no. They haven't come yet. I've only been here for about a year. They haven't come yet. But, no, they will not come to a show.
Ah, that's crazy.
No.
They don't support it at all, anything you do?
No, my mom would totally be into going to a show. I think I make fun of her a little bit too much. I really wanted to see it.
Oh, wow, that's crazy.
I don't know. I mean, I curse a lot in real life, and I curse a fair amount in my act, too. I just think like they're just very straight laced, you know, like I just, my mom doesn't want to hear me say fuck on stage, you know, even if the joke is pretty PG, like I think I would lose her at fuck. I would lose her at saying shit, you know,
so bad just over a word.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that's bullshit, by the way. I am so tired of like people, like not to your parents specifically, but of like this fucking, what the fuck year is it? And we're worried about words. Like there's such bigger things going on and people are still like, oh, that hurts my ears. Like, it's just, shut the fuck up, will you? Like, it's unbelievable.
Well, I mean, Texas is just, I mean, Texas is its own thing, you know, like, it's really interesting. I haven't been to Texas with my girlfriend. Like, we haven't gone there. And she grew up in LA, which is like, you know, really liberal, like really accepting.
Everything's okay, yeah.
Yeah. And so I think we come from really different backgrounds around that stuff. I think some things that like I just get pissed at like homophobic stuff. Like, I'm that person that like, you know, sometimes on bad days I'll
wanna throw down, maybe
I'll like rant on Facebook. I'll like call out people for, you know, posting stuff. Like, I'm that girl. And she just doesn't get that way. And I think it's because, you know, she just is like, whatever, they're stupid. Move
on. Who gives a fuck?
But it like lands with me. I'm like, no, like they're stupid, but there's a lot of them and they have a lot of power in a lot of parts of our country. You know? So I don't know.
You deal with a lot of homophobic stuff? Do you deal with a lot of people like and you take it personally, obviously?
I mean, I don't think I take it as personally anymore. I think it was hard. But, like, literally, like, when I came out and kind of, like, made that more public, like, you know, I got Facebook messages from, like, random people I haven't seen in years that were literally just, like, Bible verses. Like, how do you, you know?
Oh, my God.
How do you reconcile your lifestyle with this, you know? I think what's also hard is people, I noticed, started making assumptions that I just had, like, bad relationships with men. You know, people make that assumption. They're just like, oh, like, you must have, you know, like, you must date women because you have been damaged by men. That's like the assumption that people make, and that just pisses me off. It's like, I had a great dad. Like, he passed away. I had a great dad. My grandpa's awesome. I've had great guy friends. I've dated really sweet, respectful guys my whole life. But people do, they just like assume like, oh, like you have issues with guys and that's why you date girls.
You know what the whole shit kicking, the weird, it's not, is it irony, the coincidence, the whole thing is, if they spent as much time as they do like investigating your life and the reason you do the things you do, if they turned that and did that on themselves, they'd have no reason to go after you. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't understand what allows people to think of themselves as superior just because they believe this certain thing or allow themselves to participate in a certain thing and then tell you that something you're doing isn't right. Like, that just, I don't agree with the homophobic things anyway. I read a thing, and that we might have talked about before with Gene Moore, that if you don't have any problem with homosexuals or whatever else, you start to think yourself that you are gay, or you start to have your own problems with it because your society pushes such a pressure on people to not like it. And it's insane and it's fucking outdated. It's, to me, it's in the same level as curse words. It's like, some people prefer this. Who gives a shit? It's so fucking insane. Like, why does it fucking matter? I can't understand it. I admire you for dealing with it, though, and you deal with it all the time, but you do it with a smiling face. And, by the way, gay people have so much more energy. I told you this tonight. They're so much more like just peppy and happy, and they're not dealing with like the weight of the world, I don't think, as much. Or actually twice as hard, but you just have a better attitude.
It's the glitter that runs through our veins.
Yeah,
you know?
Is it? Absolutely. Oh, that's great. So is it no more men for you then? No more forever? Maybe?
Well, I'm gonna say no, because I really love who I'm with now. So I don't think there will be any other women for me either. Yeah. So, but you know, if for some reason that didn't work out, I mean, I'm open. Yeah. You know, but I don't know. Cute? I mean, what I found to be true is that like I haven't fallen in love with men the way that I have with women. So
what is it that attracts you to women? What do you look for in a girl? I guess maybe you can use the girl you're with as an example. What attracted you to her? What is it?
What do you look for? Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can answer that really like universally, but I mean, I don't know.
Personality, nice things.
I think.
Nice car. God.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that question. I don't know.
Yeah. Don't answer it then, because it was a stupid fucking question. Don't break off of that.
Just something in the universe.
Because, I mean, definitely, I mean, obviously the physical stuff plays a role, but it's just like, I don't know, it's like an essence thing, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? You think, would you consider yourself, like, not superstitious. God, what's the word? Like intuitive.
Essence was a perfect word. Yeah. An essence of somebody. Yeah.
You can pick up on that vibes, right? Like you're very cool about that. Yeah.
I mean, I think I know it's like a really like, you know, cheesy, like stereotypical thing to say, but like I do think like I fall in love with the person. So maybe I just didn't fall in love with a guy that I dated because like I didn't find the right person, and I found the right person with women. But, you know, I don't know. I don't think that I would. I don't like labels, you know, so I'm just like, well, you know, I'm happy with what I'm doing now. And, you know, I'm definitely somewhere on the LGBT spectrum. So I'll just keep myself all wrapped up in my rainbow flag like a little burrito baby. And we'll go from there.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So teaching forever, teaching for the rest of your life. That's what you want to do. You're a
CIA
teacher.
I don't teach now.
You don't?
No, I work for an educational nonprofit, but we do work across the state. We do more like policy stuff and like human resources and kind of bringing teachers to classrooms. But yeah, I'm ed for life. I love it. I love the work. It's interesting. It's good. I love working with kids.
I would always want to be a teacher too. I think it's like a personality thing. I think you have it where you just like to talk to people and help people out, right? Like that's really cool.
Yeah, I think it's really funny. I think I'm a lot like, I think my teaching persona is pretty tough, actually. Like, I definitely, I think, you know, you need to push people to get the best of them. And so I'm kind of a hard ass, you know, for lack of a way to put it. Like, I love my kids, but I think that's why I do well with high schoolers. Like, I think I would just make little kids cry. Like, I think high schoolers, like, you can just be more direct with them, you know, and they don't cry. I mean, sometimes they cry. I make high schoolers cry. Actually, fun story. One of my former students won the NCAA national championship a couple years ago. He played for UConn. And I remember I was watching him, like, on ESPN, like, win this, like, national championship. And I had this moment where I was like, I made you cry when you were in the ninth grade. Like, I had your dad on like speed dial. Like you were like in my classroom after school. Like I just made you cry. Like,
why'd you make him cry? What'd you do?
All the other teachers just passed him because he was a basketball player. And I mean, I loved him. Like, I mean, we had a good relationship, but he would just get mad because he would not turn in stuff because he was a cocky basketball player. Yeah. And I was like the only teacher that was like, no, really, like you are going to come after school and you are going to have to do this work or I will fail you and you will not be able to play.
Damn, you pushed him. You were the one. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was really proud of him. But it was just funny. It's like all like tough on TV. And I was like, I just remember you being like a 14-year-old boy, and like, you know, like crying in my detention. You know, it's just funny.
I don't know, crying at school is weird. Like, I've seen people cry. I fucking cried in elementary school and wherever else. I remember I got caught in first grade. I peed my pants. And then I cried afterwards, which is, like, two of the most pathetic things to happen in a row. And then, yeah, the teacher wasn't having it, and she made me stay in, and I wasn't allowed to go out on recess. And I was just like, fucking, yeah.
Sad story.
I guess first grade and ninth grade are a little different.
People used to pee their pants.
Do you have any
embarrassing
childhood stories?
I also peed my pants in kindergarten.
Yeah.
I left my class to go to the bathroom, and I couldn't get through the big door, so I peed my pants right there on the spot. But kindergarten's full of people just dropping pisses. Like
dropping pisses,
yeah.
Did you ever have, like, an incident where you were, like a one-off incident? Obviously, I'm revealing that I have, but, like, a one-off incident where you were, like, an older kid, like, somewhere between the ages of, like, 7 and 12, and you just had, like, a random, like, wet-the-bed experience, and you were like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God. I wet the bed till I was, like, 15 or 16.
I didn't, like, wet the bed that much at all. I don't think, I swear to God, I'm going on a limb here. I don't think I ever wet the bed. Yeah. Like, no, maybe I did once. People talk about peeing till 15 and whatever else. They say
serial killers pee their bed more.
Hey, this motherfucker is a serial killer.
So tell me, have you ever tortured animals?
No, I haven't.
That's good. No, I don't remember really doing it much either, but I remember I had this one point where I was like, kind of was like upper elementary. I was like 9 or 10 or something. Mm-hmm. And just this one random night, I peed the bed. And I just remember waking up and just being mortified. I was like, I'm really too old for this. Like, why? I'm 10 years old. I just wet the bed. It was just like a random story. But I remember it really vividly because in my dream, I was like going, like I'd gone into like a bathroom stall and like locked the door. Like it was like a public bathroom. Mm-hmm. So in my dream, I was like doing the right thing. And then I woke up and I was like, are you fucking kidding me, man? I locked the door to the bathroom. I like, you know, whatever, like set my stuff down. Like it was good.
I do that at age 24.
Yeah, that's good. That works too. Is alcohol involved?
Most of the time.
Peed my pants the other day when alcohol was involved, where it was a month ago, maybe. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely have pictures. Stood up and peed my pants.
I have pictures.
Yeah. It was a brown, maybe black night. It was brown blackout. So.
It's funny that the dreams that you have, you're always peeing. Like, I always Now I wake up, but in my dream I go like, oh my God, I just gotta pee so bad. I just gotta go.
Yeah, yeah.
It depends on like how far into your dream you are. Like if you go into the bathroom, like you must have like a lot of control over your dreams to have to like actually enter a stall. Cause I'll like turn around and go like, here's fine. And I'll just wake up and I'll be like, God damn
guys, horse girls.
But
do you remember your dreams?
All the time.
Yeah.
I have so much deja vu. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, very nice.
I used to keep a book, and it's still somewhere up in my room, and I would write down when I woke up, and the very first one is, like, something with my family, and it was, like, February 2010. And then, like, 6 months later, I would write in random ones as I remember, and I would have full pages of just the craziest shit. And now that I look back on it, I realize, like, all the problems I was going through in my life were, like, being told to me in my dreams. And it's very strange, and I'll have dreams now that are, like, like, I have apocalyptic dreams, and I realize that, like, the way I interpret it, there's a lot of water. I go, like, oh, so I'm feeling a lot of emotions right now based on what's going on in my life, and I'm realizing things are changing, and they're not going to be the same. I try and pay attention, and I think it's really important. Do you remember your dreams?
Oh, I always remember my dreams. Yeah. I had a really weird dream a couple nights ago. I dreamed that I was in my house, and I have, like, a screen glass door up front, and I dreamed that Kim Jong-un... And what's his dad's name? Kim Jong-il? Is it the old North Korea and New Korea were literally like they were looking for me. They were like hunting me down to kill me. And they were like looking through the window. And I remember I was like hiding behind my bar, and for some reason like my foot stuck out and like a little bit of light. And so they realized that they broke into the house. They were like about to leave, and they saw a sliver of my shoe, and they came in after me. And I remember I had this like I had like a kitchen knife, and I was literally just like swinging in an X, fighting off the leaders of North Korea. And I woke up, and I'd been all flailing around. But it was just like as we sit up, and you're like, "What the fuck, Rachel? Like, really? North Korea's hunting you
sounds
down?"
Sounds like you are like have America ingrained in
God,
you.
God, right? Yeah. I'm not even that patriotic. I was like, Jesus, what the deal? I have weird dreams like that though all the time.
There's dreams I love to remember my dreams. Have you ever done this? This is a great thing to do.
North Korea was in the news like at least 30 times in the last 2 months. So there's no way that it wasn't getting in your head.
I think it's because they're coming after me personally. Obviously. Yeah.
Through your screen door.
My comedy is offensive to them. To his honorable dictatorship or whatever the fuck they call him.
Put a nicotine patch.
Oh, Jesus.
On your arm.
Oh, God.
And go to sleep. Not only, okay, you have like lucid dreams, but you have violent lucid dreams. Like those North Koreans will come through your thing, and you and them will gouge each other.
You realize you're
like,
not being a very good salesman for this technique, right? You know what's awesome? Put this thing on your body. It's like your worst nightmares will come alive.
But
it's fucking
so
awful.
It's an experience. I've done it a few times. It's the most insane thing. I guess the receptors in the patch the patch keeps the receptors in your brain. At some point awake, so it's kind of like having like a flashing light or something that keeps you lucid while you're dreaming, but the nicotine makes you react violently, so all your dreams are full of like blood and violence. Like I watched in my dreams a guy I used to deliver donuts to get shot into pieces, and I watched him get destroyed and mutilated, and then like I just like hung out while everyone just fucking like got bloody and shit. It was insane. Blood constantly.
So let me see if I can just sort of sum up.
You should do it. It's the shit.
Let me see if I can sum up your basic proposition here.
Please.
Rachel, if you would like to develop PTSD, here is one way that you can go about doing that.
Yes, please do. Or you could, you know, sign up and go fight against North Korea. You've already having dreams about them. Yes.
Apparently. God, that sounds awful.
It is awful, but I like to explore that world. I'm very fascinated by that world. I think it's insane that
you like horror movies?
Ah, sure. No. I like any whatever. I just barely ever watch movies.
Yeah, yeah.
I anytime I'm sitting down watching a movie, I don't know if you guys are like me, I like, just go like, I'm going to go masturbate or go for a walk. I need to like get up and do something.
It's got to be sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's got to be sci-fi.
Huh. And I come downstairs and I see Coop watching movies, and I go, I want to watch this movie, and I wish I could just sit down and like watch the movie with him. But when I'm alone in my own environment, I don't sit and watch a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Are you like that? Do you like movies?
I like to like have stuff on the background while I do other things. So kind of like
I do the
like,
same thing. Yeah.
Like I have my little laptop. I like throw on Netflix and I like clean the kitchen or something. But yeah, I mean, I watched a movie with Eric last night, and like that was probably the first movie I've just sat down and watched in months. You know. Yeah. So
that's the shit.
Yeah. I love to sit down and give my full attention to something. For some reason, just pay attention to what's going on.
I just have so much
OCD. I like to do that, but not with movies. Like I have like I'll read, like I'll do other stuff, but like I just Yeah.
I'm a very visual learner.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I have to be super invested in the movie to sit down. Otherwise, I'm doing kitchen like you. Yeah. I can watch it in the background, and I can get the gist of it, and I don't need to give it my full attention. It's very...
I do love going to movie theaters alone.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot of people are like... You know, I feel like a lot of women in particular are like, oh, God, no, I never... I'm just like, no, it's fucking great. Like,
I only go to the movies alone. Yeah, that's great. All I do, and I'll get trashed by myself, and I know it sounds really depressing, but it's my favorite thing ever. You want to know why? Because after the movie, I don't have to share conversation with anybody about shit.
No,
I hate people like, well, I really liked the beginning, and you're like, shut the fuck up, we just it's fine, just leave,
just
like,
let me have my own experience here.
God, there was a lady I went and saw This Is the End. Have you seen that?
No.
Very funny flick, but I went and saw it the second time, and it wasn't as good. And there was this lady who was behind me up to the left. She was, like, self-narrating the movie to her husband. She was like, oh, it's because he's Jewish. That's why that was funny. And it was like, oh, it's because this. And then there's a scene with a penis, and she talks to her husband for a minute about how she wasn't bothered by the penis or that it was sexual. She was just upset at, like, how long it took place. It's like, shut the fuck up. We're at a fucking movie, and I'm by myself, and I'm really lonely, and I'd appreciate it if I had someone to talk to. It'd be great. I don't, you know.
Didn't want her encroaching on your own penis.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I had my dick out. I'm jerking off in the front row. That's the perfect place to hide and masturbate. And shout out Pee Wee Herman and Roger, Mr. Roger.
Oh, no, not Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers?
Oh, no.
Slander his bad name.
You leave Mr. Rogers out of this.
Who was it?
Asshole.
Gary Shandling? Who was that?
Oh, no. Not Gary Oldman. No.
Gary Oldman.
No, it wasn't Gary Oldman.
Who was it? It was some fucking weird...
No, it was somebody I heard talking about.
Oh, yeah. He jerked off everywhere.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
So Pee Wee Herman got caught in the theaters, right. And then there was another dude from another kid show. God, what was it?
I know who you're talking
about. Oh my gosh. All right, it's got to be remembered before this is over. This is bullshit.
Well, you know, apparently that's not a deal breaker anymore. You know, you got Spitzer and Wiener running back for office in New York again after their whole
dick pic
and a prostitution thing. They're probably going to win their head, so... You know, like apparently, you know, not a deal breaker anymore. So masturbate away, my friend. You can still be the mayor of Phoenix one day.
Yeah. That's fucking insane. How does that make you feel? Doesn't that make you feel crazy? The world we live in is fucking nuts. Isn't everyone crazy? Isn't it nuts?
I'm really looking forward to just like presidential elections in like 30 years, right? It's like Obama gets shit now because he has like one black and white photo of him like smoking pot when he was in high school. It's like, what's it going to be like when like everyone had their middle school documented on, you know,
fucking
Facebook, like Facebook for their middle school.
Exactly. It's just
Here's the thing that drives me nuts about Facebook. And I realized this the other day is that it makes everything and everybody seem newsworthy. And no one is. It's not important. But for whatever reason, because we have this platform, people haven't figured out that, like, maybe I should have something to say. Maybe I should talk intelligently about a subject. Instead, they just talk.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because it's there. And it's really fucking everyone up.
What's your least favorite category of Facebooker? You know, like the most annoying posters?
Everything all the time. Everyone who has to – everyone who writes, like, oh, my God, this. Or actually, you know what? It's e-cards. They're funny as shit, but I really – sorry if you post a bunch of
them. No, I don't.
They're funny as shit, but I really hate when people post it. I'm like, make your own, you know? Make your own thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you have memes, e-cards, memes, that kind of whole recycled stuff, yeah.
People I went to high school just suck too, yeah. He doesn't – you have a Facebook. He's a bro.
I refuse to participate.
Look at you. Watching whole movies. No. That's why you have an attention span because you're not on Facebook.
Exactly.
I hate when people are like awkwardly emo when they're just like, you know, people are going to hate what they're going to hate, but like, I love myself and like, I don't care. And so like, you know, to all those haters that say that like, you know, I'm this or that, like I say, fuck y'all. It's like, oh my God, like that is so uncomfortable for everyone. I think the older you get, the more uncomfortable it is. Like I'm still, you know, whatever, you're 18, 19, you know, you're emo, but like I'm Facebook friends with folks who are like 45 and are posting this and I'm like, dude. Take a chill pill. Like, go to a therapist. You know?
You have kids.
Yeah.
You have kids.
Exactly.
There's a girl we work with. Her name, I won't say it. Her name starts with J and it ends with any. And she posted a thing the other day and it made me feel so bad because she's like 39 or however old. And she wrote, Friday night again, sad face. It said, no friends, no fun, no date. this sucks, my life sucks. And then there was like 25 comments, 7 likes. I was like, who the fuck is liking this?
I'm about to have sex with that chick.
Shout out. I'm sending her your way, dude. But I felt bad.
Entrepreneurial spirit right there.
If you're going to be an old, like if you're going to be all shitty and sad on your own, and if that's what you, why are you going to go spread it out like bird seed for the rest of us? Do you know what I mean? Right. Like, leave it alone.
Well,
like,
take responsibility for your own happiness. Sure. You know, it's like, you know, instead of being like, my Friday night is not what I would like it to be.
Yeah.
What can I do to change that? Instead, I'm just going to like, put it on other people to make me feel better.
Yeah, it's
you know?
Their fault.
It's fucking, we're out of control with it. And I feel so old when I say this, but we're out of control with it because
Listen,
you got, all right, I broke this down before. You got Facebook, right, which is pictures and text, video, whatever else. Then you have separate, you have Vine, which is video. You have Twitter, which is just text. You have Instagram, which is just pictures. You have email. You have text. You have Snapchat. It's like insane. Like, what the fuck do we need all this for?
Okay, so
why?
Question. Is it acceptable to break up with someone over text? Yes or no?
Nah.
Okay.
If you are with somebody to the point where you would have to actually break up with them, to the point where you guys have spent enough time together where you'd need to physically say no more, you need to do that in person.
Yeah.
That's a rule.
Like, yeah, you're asking like a certain type of people because like that, people who break up over text don't date for a long time or maybe they do and they're just.
I remember when I was in college, I'm trying to figure out if it was the class I talked about earlier. I think it was a different class, but this chick I was in class with, her fiance proposed to her on AIM.
Wow.
And this was like back in.
Did
whatever,
he use like a
like,
moto cop?
Yeah, totally. He like used like, found like a picture of a ring and like, you know, added it in there.
Oh my God.
And he was like in Costa Rica.
And she obviously said yes.
And she said yes. And so she's like in class and she's like, I got engaged. And like, we're like, let me see the ring. And she's like, oh, well, I don't really have it yet because he's in Costa Rica. And he proposed to me on AIM. And I just remember that was the first moment when I was like, oh God, we've really taken a turn here. Like, we've really gone down a bad road.
We've taken a turn, but. There's this whole thing where it's like embrace change and change is the only constant and that whole bullshit, which makes me think like, what is the future for us then?
Yeah.
If this is where we are going, we're completely connected. Everyone knows everyone else's shit. And what's weird is we've never been further apart as people. Like we're all so fucking, but no one talks about anything fucking meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all meaningless bullshit. I've never felt like further away from people. Now, I don't know if that's me getting older or me not embracing this. And it's weird. Like, what do you think? Is that what we're supposed to do?
Well, I think it's because, like, you know, when you didn't just have all of your business out there all the time, like, you, like, people learned how to go up to someone and say, like, tell me what you are feeling.
Yeah.
Like, tell me what's going on
and
with
talk.
You. And, like, because the expectation is just now everyone puts their shit out there. No one has the responsibility to be like, I'm going to actually seek you out and, like, ask to engage with you. And so people feel lonely because no one seeks them out anymore.
Yeah.
And that leads to more oversharing, which leads to more people feeling like they don't ever need to ask you anything real, you know?
Yeah. It's weird because, like, that's exactly true. Like, it's so hard to interact with people one-on-one now.
Yeah.
A lot of people avoid eye contact.
I mean, I'm really uncomfortable with both of you right now.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. I'm sure you are. It's very hot and sweaty in here. A couple of weirdos. It's just, it's strange to me because I'm nostalgic for a time that I wasn't around for, but I really wish I lived in, like, the 50s. And I don't know if the people in the 50s were like, man, the 1890s were the shit. Maybe they did. Maybe they really loved, like, the industrial age, you know? Like, who fucking knows, you know? Maybe the 50s sucked compared to, like, the 10s. But I feel like we're just, like, as people, like, we're fucking weird. This thing is weird.
Yeah.
We're not doing anything important. No one's doing anything good. What happened to the good people? Does anyone feel like, am I going insane?
I feel like you could feel the same way about that in the 50s by hanging out with people too much in person.
Mm-hmm.
Be like the real life internet where you're oversaturated with people and their stupid comments and their stupid ideas. Or you just go along with the game.
Yeah.
Which is what people do nowadays still. They like it
the
and they go around with it.
Have you ever broken up with anyone over text?
Oh, never.
Yeah.
No, I think it's important to be pretty, like, direct, like, after, like, a first or second date when it hasn't gone well. So I've definitely been that person that, like, has had a first date and hasn't gone well. And I've sent the follow-up text, like, and it's been like, I had a really great time. And I sent the follow-up text that's like, I really don't think that you know, we're really clicking. Like, I'd love to hang out with you as friends, but I don't really want to go on a second date. You know, like
that's, well, that's the difference between guys and girls. So, I don't even send that second text.
Well, me neither.
Well, it's really funny, actually. I talked to one of my guy friends about it, and I was like, so if, you know, if a girl's not into you, would you rather have her tell you or just not say anything? And I think most women would say, I would just want to know so I don't have to obsess and worry about it. And every man I've spoken to has been like, no, just nothing.
Just nothing.
Because then I can just say, it's not me. She died.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
She got hit by a bus. Yeah. Or, like, you know, there's some way possible that I'm not being rejected in this scenario.
Yeah. It's an ego save.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
It's totally protect the back.
I almost feel the opposite. I'd rather be told right off that there's,
yeah,
we're just going to be friends or something. And like, okay.
I just hit this age where, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that was it.
Where honesty is exactly what I want now. And I, oh, God, male Delilah. I just feel like, honestly, like, honestly, honesty is, that sounds like a T, doesn't that? Honesty?
I don't know.
Oh. Maybe it is. God, I'm hack as shit. I'm so hack. Anyway, that's all I want is just the honesty I'd rather be told to. Like, I'm really past the point of, like, whatever else. It's like I hit 23, 24, and now all of a sudden I'm going, like, I don't have much time to deal with bullshit.
Yeah.
So we can talk and we can be direct about a relationship, but I'd really like to go out with you sometime, Rachel. Oh, oh my goodness.
Wow.
I just
Delilah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh,
well,
geez.
Not much time to deal with bullshit. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah, let's wrap it up. Plug your shit. Plug everything. Plug anything. Plug your butt. I don't know. Yeah, don't do that.
Maybe awesome.
Again, well, on that t-shirt.
Ladies comedy night, August 4th, 7 p.m. at the Comedy Spot.
Okay, absolutely.
It is going to sell out. Mm-hmm. You cannot show up at the door. We've already sold like half the tickets, so go to thecomedyspot.net and get those tickets now if you want to show up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shout House Show with apparently Mr. Frank will be there as well. August, what's the day?
August 27th.
August 27th over in Glendale. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's a really cool place.
And then we're going to have another gay comedy night in September. I believe it's September 16th, I want to say. Erin Foley's the headliner. She's fucking hysterical. So yeah, those are what's on the docket these next couple months.
You heard it here.
For you, Frey?
I am up. Oh, wow. Oh, God, Michael. Jesus, thanks. I'm up July 28th, I guess, on the open mic. I'm going to go out there and try and do some stuff. July 30th, somewhere else. And then somewhere else after that, we'll figure it all out. I don't know. Look on Facebook, whatever. I don't really pay attention. Yeah, that's right.
Delilah's like the wind. Delilah.
Hi, you're listening to Delilah. Coop, when are you doing any shows?
Never again.
Never again. Awesome. Mr. Motherfucker. Well, you heard it here first. Rachel Hinton, her favorite color
Thank
is
so
purple.
Much.
She is the shit. Very funny. Mike Cooper, as always, I am Frank. That was Amateur Hour 24. Thank you.
It's its own kind of California without an ocean. People used to pee their pants all the time. I smoke cigarettes and I like fucking government. They're out to get me. I know it.
I got on the CIA's website and I'd had a couple of glasses of wine. She pulled me aside after she caught me doing this a few times and she was like, Rachel, if I come into the class again and I find you doing Elvis when I'm not there, we're going to have a parent-teacher conference. You're like the man version of Delilah. You know, you
got like oh, my sexy, God, like, that's the worst shit.
I would not give him that much credit.